You're listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real-life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
Well, you've got a hat that says built for speed and it has a motorcycle on it. And I am wearing a t-shirt that says Hayabusa, which is a stupidly fast motorcycle. So I'm gathering that there could be some commonality, or maybe you've just borrowed someone's hat.
I borrowed someone's hat. I'm sorry to let you down. My college roommates, we had motorcycles that I would ride. Then one of them broke his tibia and fibia. And so we all kind of backed away a little bit because he was in the hospital for a good amount of time.
That's a leg, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the lower leg. And kind of.
That's like both bones. That's a twofer.
Both bones. Yeah, both bones.
Did they put his leg on the right? I was reading this article the other day about this doctor who got fined for cutting off someone's left leg when they should have cut off the right leg. So hopefully he still has. I mean, how can he make that sort of mistake? You know, don't you check beforehand? Is it that one? Are you sure? Is that one?
In the surgeries I've had, they actually will write this leg in like black permanent marker. And it's just like, so it makes me think that that happens more often than you'd think.
Yeah. And how do you, we just don't throw it away afterwards. Put it in the cooler and not the trash just in case.
Yeah. You want to keep the good leg. You want to keep the leg. You could probably use it even if it's not, you know, for that person. You could use it for something else.
Like a baseball bat. So
like, yeah. Yeah. Kind of like maybe like a putter.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that'd be quite funny if you turn up on a golf course with your left leg and then your colleague could say, I've got nothing against your right leg, but then again, neither of you, which is actually a direct quote from Monty Python.
This is
becoming very Monty Python-esque. But one thing that is not Monty Python-esque is Homeroom Co-Living, which is the company. Man. Did you see what I did there? The company that you founded
in your great transition.
The chief executive orificer. I think that's
That's me. I still doubt it sometimes, but yeah, that's me.
Is it head chef and chief bottle washer?
Pretty much. Yeah. Everything. I get to do all the messy stuff. So yeah, Homeroom Co-Living, we're just expanding our fifth city in the United States and we have like 500 tenants. We've had a pretty crazy year. I think coming out of COVID, you know, we started the year with a bit over 100 people living with us and now we have almost 500. So it's been growing really fast. A lot of people were living with their parents, and I think nobody liked that, the parents or the kids.
I think your parents love it secretly. I mean, when your 40-year-old kids are living with you, you don't want to let go of these kids. I mean, even though they cost every damned penny you've got. You know, there is this, I have older kids and I would just love them to stay at home and you know, filthy up my rooms and invite their friends around and get drunk and throw up everywhere.
Yeah, especially if they're in their 40s. Yeah, that'd be wonderful.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was actually the all-time high in the United States in terms of number of people living with their parents. It was at, since the Great Depression, 52% lived with their parents. So that means 52% of parents were miserable. And so that's sort of what co-living helps, right? We actually have had parents. I was on a pod recently and the guy was like, oh, I need to tell my son about this because his son was at home and, you know, he wasn't as excited as you would have been, you know, I guess. And so we're kind of like, you know, we're housing young adults, but really we're helping their parents more.
And again, so that's obviously the problem, but there are nuances, distinct differences between the programs that you offer and just sort of, you know, going to rent a room in a house.
Yeah, very different. The difference, I think it's an evolution more than anything else. We have a lot of experience doing this. I've been doing it personally for years. I, you know, bought houses in Austin and like as far back as 2015 and was turning them into roommate houses. So we've had a lot of reps. I housed over 1,000 roommates and, you know, kind of since we started the company and since I started doing it myself. And so you just kind of figure out these little tension points throughout the experience with roommates, like the dishes left in the sink, you know, people don't clean up well enough. All these things are part of our program, right? We have maid service every month. We do exterior cleanings. We have, you know, general guidelines that we think are very free, but also very open. We also have an app where you can transfer between a house to another house with the push of a button. And then online tours. Most of our roommates can book a room kind of like Airbnb pretty quickly. online, see the whole thing. So it's elevating that roommate experience from Craigslist, which is like you're talking to a dicey stranger and hoping for the best, to like you come through a portal, you get to take a virtual tour of our property, talk to a nice leasing person, and then you get to be matched with machine learning to people that fit you. So it's definitely an evolution.
And again, the problems that we solve, again, Craigslist. So you've got people that you don't know, you've got properties that don't have any kind of quality assurance. You've got presumably no visibility in terms of pricing. So there could be wild, you know, variations in pricing and quality. And again, from an owner's perspective, so do you own these properties or do you bring other investors in who can effectively co-invest with you? And effectively, is it like a high quality leasing? I will let you answer at some point, but I'm going to continue talking. You know, so is it like a...
Just taking notes on the questions.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm just making it up. Just go along. Yes.
Yeah, so we... Homeroom doesn't offer any property. We don't own any property, sir. We're kind of the Airbnb for this model. So we help investors find either take their house and turn it into a perfected co-living space. We have a number of things that we think are important in a co-living space. One is furnished common areas, because when people live together and they buy furniture together, it's usually not very good. It doesn't look good together. And then if someone leaves, they take the couch and you're like, now what do we do? Does anyone have a truck? No one has a truck.
Well, I just had flashbacks and when I was a student, when we bought our first couch from the secondhand couch store down the road, I think it was about $10. And boy, you know, it was worth every penny of it.
It's a fun experience. But we had, you know, one of the houses I lived in, we all bought a TV stand. And then when one of the guys left, he wanted his money back for the TV stand. It just makes things are tricky. So we buy the furniture is provided by the investor. And, you know, so that setting up the space, using the investor money to make a perfect co-living space is one of the key parts of it. But then the leasing experience is really refined as well. And that's the investor's not really involved on that side, the owner of the property. But we do not own. We enable the investors to make more money through this type of renting.
So again, it's, as you say, Airbnb is a great sort of simile or metaphor, because it's you're providing, but it's much more ongoing than that, isn't it? So, but again, if you go back to your background, so your background was, you know, tech, it was something, I've come across a lot of people that are in tech that are interested in real estate. I'm not sure, is it the metaphysical versus the absolute?
Definitely so different
what,
worlds.
What led absolutely. You down this path? Because you're dealing with people. So having dealt with, you know, bits and bytes and technology and computers, to deal with something as unpredictable as people must have been an interesting journey for you.
Yeah, it has been an interesting journey. You know, running, being a landlord or kind of like helping properties run is way harder than you'd think, but it gets incrementally harder as you have roommates because there's more people involved and things. So many interesting things have happened in the history of our company. And so, yeah, much different than software. My background is in Silicon Valley, worked at Electronic Arts, SanDisk. I worked for a startup called GuideSpark. I think that was recently acquired. But I was investing in real estate on the side the whole time. So real estate has always been kind of my side hustle. Basically, a year out of school, I bought my first rental property in Texas. So that's sort of what a homeroom is, kind of the unique part of what our team brings, is that most of us are tech nerds that have real estate hobbies that we've kind of like pulled into one company, essentially. Mike, our co-founder, he worked at Airbnb, Facebook, Google. He's our growth guy, but he also is a real estate investor. Caitlin used to be a consultant for property managers. So we all have kind of that real estate bent, but also like a deep kind of foundation in kind of Silicon Valley tech.
So it is, I guess, in some ways, it is actually a direct competitor in some ways to Airbnb, because Airbnb tends to provide short-term, I wouldn't call them lets, they're short-term, you know, rentals, I suppose.
Yeah, you can rent for 6 months on Airbnb today, for sure. What they don't do is the co-living side, which multiple roommates. We don't see that being something that is interesting to them, because the pie of what they're looking at is really big. And the part that we do uniquely is matching roommates. Our CTO has a PhD in machine learning, so he's building kind of connection points to make sure that the people that live together actually have like better compatibility than they would, you know, just on a blind Craigslist per
se. Yes. Is there a potential offshoot to create a dating company where you've actually got this sort of, you know, and maybe like a wedding planning company and, you know, something from all this downstream stuff that you're creating by putting these people together under one roof?
Yeah. Actually, a girl that I'm dating now said, why don't you use your algorithm on girls that you date? It seems like it would be a great idea. She's really into the idea, actually. You know, I think you want something slightly different from your romantic partners than your roommates, typically.
Yes.
But I'm fine if people want to, you know, they can reach out to Thomas, and if they want to have, if you want to have your romantic partner go through our 8 steps, we can do it for you.
Yes.
I don't know what the results are going to be. I can't guarantee anything. We'll probably make you sign some kind of legal release. But yeah, I would be interested to see what would happen.
But again, the scalability is quite important, because I would have thought the COVID would have had a major impact on, you know, people's ability to move around. As you say, people are living with their parents, you know, far more now than ever before. So what sort of dynamics have you seen change over the last 18 months to 2 years with the impact of the pandemic?
COVID was a double-edged sword for HomeRun. It was the scariest day of, I mean, it was a scary day, right? And our company was still very, very early at that point. I wrote a letter to the investors like, I think there's a real risk to the survivability of our company. But then we proceeded to build a pretty good COVID kind of protocol. And we only had 3 houses get it, and only one of those 3 spread it to their roommates. But we have seen less movement, especially in 2020. There wasn't as much movement. It wasn't much, but we had very high occupancy. We were 100% booked. So people just stayed where they were, and they stayed with us, which was great. But yeah, some of the silver lining though for us is I was going to build the headquarters in Kansas City, locally with local talent, but COVID forced us to go fully remote. And then I said, well, why don't I start to bring in team members in other locations? And now our company is fully global. Our co-founding team is in San Francisco, Canada, and Vietnam, and I'm in Kansas City, and honestly it works beautifully, and it's allowed us to add better talent.
I mean, again, that's really interesting, because I think that's something that a lot of companies that are coming out of the, so I don't think it's post-COVID, but you know, that were born in the COVID environment are probably able to grow much faster than traditional. I mean, I saw this press release about a company in our space the other day who, you know, the picture is that they're going to grow, you know, hundreds of people. And there's the picture of the office. And you just think that just seems so outdated now, where growth is now lateral growth as opposed to this sort of shoving everyone in the same box. So, you know, would you see that as a blessing or a...
100% a blessing. I think, you know, we have, and it's a framework that I've been interviewed by companies that have been fully remote since like for a while. So they've been out there, but there hasn't been any big players that have been successful doing it or tried to really do it. But we are, I would say, we are 3 times as successful because we're remote. Our engineering team is in Vietnam, so they're more affordable. Our leasing team is based out of the Philippines. So, you know, but not only are they more affordable, but there's strength to that culture of that skill set, right?
Yes.
And it's inherent. And so you can actually play to like cultural strengths in a way that you never could before. And you don't need a new office. You don't need to like go through the legal challenges of kind of going international, but you can get the strengths of different cultures and countries and cities kind of all on your startup now, which is, it's crazy. It's amazing.
And again, if we can just sort of drill down on that a little bit, because I think that is really interesting. You know, what are the, I wouldn't say challenges, but what are the real payoffs that you've had? Have you found it a lot easier to hire people on the basis that your package is a remote package, as opposed to trying to find local people and creating some sort of, you know, head office, whether it's in Kansas City or San Francisco?
100%. Our first hire is, and who now made a co-founder, Caitlin. She's phenomenally talented, and she's located in rural Canada.
Yep.
So she's not going to be able to work at Microsoft, Google. You know, she's not going to be able to work at any of those places, but she works here. Brianna was our second crucial hire. She was at home with her family because they had medical issues, or her dad had medical issues.
Yes.
And she's, you know, just an ultra talented sales tenant leasing person.
Yeah.
And she joined because she could work remote. Right. And so we have that over and over and over again. Thomas in Vietnam, he joined so we just are able to get this amazing talent base that was the thing they wanted more than anything else.
And again, with your engineering background, presumably you've been able to build the systems to manage the processes that you need to go through if everyone is, you know, distributed.
Yeah, it's gotten a lot easier to do that, right? And because the team, a lot of them have been remote before, and so they're helping us kind of build that up. And Yeah, it's working really nice.
So the great resignation, again, all these things that come out of left field that you yes. hardly expect. So going forwards, I think the revenue streams that you get, very different, or it's a very different model to just leasing a property out on a long-term basis. So typically you've got a landlord owns a property, wants to go and find a tenant, will go to a rental or a leasing management company who may find tenants. They'll then charge, but you've got like one family in one house. So do you find that the rental streams, are they more reliable from, co-living? Are there more costs associated with managing the property? Is the yield better for a property owner with your model than it would be with a traditional, leasing with the overhead costs of managing that?
Yeah. So the yield can be as high as double.
That's quite compelling. So, yes.
Yeah. Investors are pretty interested in money. So that's who would have thought? Who would have thought? They're very finance driven, those investors. So that's the biggest lever. In terms of stability, it actually is more stable. Co-living is the most stable revenue model we only do single family homes, to rent a single family home. With Airbnb, you have seasonality, you have potentially pandemics. And so that has been, I think it scared a lot of people. A lot of people are getting out of Airbnb. I think, that's a rare thing. I still think Airbnbs are great, but you don't get guaranteed rents, or you don't get, and with single family homes, if someone leaves, you get zero for a month, maybe 2 months, and you have to pay to kind of repair the property. So 2 to 3 months of rent are lost every time a single tenant leaves. With co-living, it's an evergreen situation. We have 5 tenants. One will leave. We will replace the next one, and we'll replace that person in 3 days after they leave. We don't have to do a full make or any of the property because we're always keeping it in good condition because we have maid service and yard care, and they have an app where they can submit issues. And so with Homeroom, you get 80% of rent in a bad month, but usually you'll get 100%.
Yeah.
So it's massively more stable.
It's more atomic, in other words. So you've got far fewer single points of failure. And scalability, so are there particular areas like areas close to student accommodation? Is this the answer, or is this an alternative to, buying properties for student accommodation where you've got that seasonality?
Yeah, I mean, this is, I think we have a lot of similarities with student housing. It's just that we don't have that seasonality whatsoever. Although most student housing folks will make them sign a full year lease. So very similar to student housing. The difference is our average age is 27. And so we've actually never had to use a full deposit to repair a property of a tenant. Average credit score is over 700. So I think it's just a little bit less. College kids are crazy. I'm sure you were, Matthew. I know I was. Renting out to college kids is a special skill. And we're definitely more focused towards mid-stage professionals.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I guess the repair bills, getting that concrete out of the toilet, can be a little bit expensive.
One of my friends in college, their house got fleas. I don't even know that houses could get fleas, but they didn't have a dog. They didn't have a dog. So that's really special.
Were they sort of biology students or something? Sort of, is there a book in there somewhere, Johnny, in terms of the strangest things that you've encountered in co-living?
Probably. I'm going to wait until we IPO and I sail into the sunset. But yeah, there's definitely experiences.
That's right, exactly.
Not going to write that quite yet. But it's never boring. Even young adults don't really know how to plunge a toilet. It seems like it causes a panic. So yeah, it's definitely interesting.
Yes.
I'll say that.
And again, the plans. I mean, so how long have you been in this? I mean, is it all 3 or 4 years, I think? Is it relatively young?
We've been doing it for 3 years, but, I see the company we are today about 18 months old. We did a heavy pivot at the beginning of 2020.
Yeah.
And that was what we were doing before is we were master leasing properties. We were buying everything. We transitioned to an investor approach where we work with investors to buy and set up the properties, which, it took a while to figure out how to present that to investors and make the process make sense and work. But this last month, we did 17 properties in a single month, which is up like 500% versus 6 months before. So it's really working. Investors are really liking the product. But yeah, it's been 3 years, but really the transition to what we are today happened 18 months ago.
And in terms of your geographic locations, at the moment, most of the properties are, you say, in the sort of Austin area.
We're in Kansas City, Austin. Actually, our two biggest markets are Dallas and Kansas City.
Yeah. And is this something that is restricted in terms of your ability to manage, or is this something that can be expanded or franchised out, or what are the plans of expanding this into multiple states and multiple geographies?
Yeah, we actually are expanding to Pittsburgh right now. We have our first Pittsburgh property under contract. Part of what we've done is really focus on being light in terms of our expansion to new markets and new cities. We can do it quickly and easily, not for very much money. So we have a new market deployment model, and it works very well. So we think our goal is 750 cities in the United States, and with potential international expansion after that.
Now, I was going to say, because the model is the sort of model that you can expand into multiple geographies, because it is just really as you say, it's a clear evolution of the standard model of single families renting properties. What are the sort of unexpected challenges that you've come across, things that you wouldn't necessarily have thought would be something that would happen?
Yeah, I think, this is my first startup, so definitely some challenges just learning how to do that. But I think one of the pieces that I didn't, some serial entrepreneurs or people that are thinking I'm going to start a startup are looking at different models and be like, that one, I should do, B2B SaaS. That seems clean. There's a lot of upside there. It's scalable. This is a problem that I had personally and that I really wanted to solve, and I didn't see anyone else doing it, especially in the middle of America. So I was like, I'm going to do this. And when you launch a managed marketplace, you don't really know what you're getting yourself into, but there's two sales channels, there's two marketing channels, there's two customers, and they're wildly different. And so that's interesting. And that's been a unique challenge, where we have two marketing people and they go back and forth between tenant and investor. It halves your resources because of you have two sides. And so that's something I love marketplaces. I think you provide all the value and it's beautiful. But at the same time, at the very beginning, it is a challenge for sure.
But again, what you've done though is you've built something that is very scalable. So you're going to get efficiencies of scale.
Yes.
At some point quite soon, I would have thought, when
we're starting to get those now. I would say what I learned at the beginning of marketplaces is that it's very difficult at the very beginning. We're starting to, the momentum is building, right? We have awareness in our cities. We have awareness with investors sending referrals our way. So the flywheel is spinning and we're accelerating. It's awesome. But at the beginning, when you start a managed marketplace or any marketplace, and you're trying to go back and forth to get supply and demand, it's tough.
Efficient way? So if you look at the other sides, you've got investors on one side, property owners. I mean, you're competing with the more traditional rental management companies. And how do you compete? Is there a particular approach that you're taking? In other words, is it saying that what they're doing is very old fashioned? And, what is the approach that you've taken that has really resonated with the investor community?
Yeah, I think a lot of it's taken from learnings of what I went through when I was buying properties, when I was in San Francisco, when I lived in San Jose, and I was buying properties in Texas, is how little you know as an out-of-state investor. You want to invest in real estate, but the process is real murky for you and you don't understand the city or the area. And so it's a lot of education and trust that you have to build. So that's part of our process. We educate clearly about what we're doing, what co-living is, what our process is, why we do each part of the process, what your numbers will look like. Then we go through we actually do the financials for investors on every property we suggest. And we'll kind of go through one of those in the meeting. And so we sell to very smart people and they want to understand why they should do this. And so being on board with telling them why and explaining how we got to this, being transparent is really important.
Is there a possibility or an opportunity to expand into fractional ownership? So if you've got multiple people renting effectively or leasing a property, a lot of that is because they can't afford their own property, but bring them all together under one roof. Is there a model where you can evolve or sort of develop into a fractional ownership as opposed to just pure rental?
Yeah, it's something that we've discussed internally. I think when we look at that model, it's hard for me to see a clear path into it today for us, because you've got the investor, unless you're tokenizing the full house and dividing those tokens, that could work. There's definitely a way to do it. I see the potential of that in the future. It's not something that we've spent a lot of time digging into, but it's something that I think we'll probably spend more time looking at in 2022.
I'm just saying, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It's not, the revenue streams are obviously very different, but, and again, what's 2022 looking like for you? What is the trajectory that your company is going to be on, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that will be determined kind of how much we raise after the Y Combinator demo day.
When is that? So, is that soon?
That's at the end of March. So we're in the winter cohort. We're looking to raise a bit of money to kind of get.
Well, that's excited. A great firm. If you can, if you can stick that stamp on your company,
yeah.
that's a great thing to have.
Yeah, the team is really excited. We met with one of the partners today, and brilliant people. So we're very lucky to be in that. So the how much money capital we're able to raise, I think will help determine kind of the trajectory. Our team has a background in like financial forecasting and planning. So we have multiple options in terms of if we raise X dollars, we're going to go this fast through this many sales and marketing dollar spends. But yeah, we're looking to get to triple digit houses per month in 2022. That'd be a nice win for us. That would be about 5x of what our record is this year.
And that's huge because that's all incremental income. And again, as you say, the model is very different to Airbnb, which is kind of, flat and seasonal. This is something that has far less input. Maybe the parents will move out into their kids' homes so that they can rent their houses out to multi-occupants like from you.
Yeah, no, right. Whatever the parents want to do to get away from their kids, we're happy to help.
The parents move out
and just you get a room and we're going to rent out the rest. Yeah, that's
part
fine.
Of the brand identity,
Yes.
Tagline is, we help you get rid of your kids.
Adult kids. We probably want to put adult in there.
But I think that's fantastic. I mean, so I think I think it's a great time to change gears here.
Let's change some gears.
Changing gears. I can never remember if it's changing up or changing down gears, but we're going to go faster and furious and crazy with the Hooked on Startups Quickfire Questionnaire.
Let's do it.
Johnny Wolf, are you ready?
I've been ready.
I was born ready, he says.
Born ready. Yeah, let's go.
Question number one. What is your favorite word?
Resilience.
And question number two, what is your least favorite word?
Exhaustion.
Exhaustion?
Yeah.
Yes. I can just imagine, yes, the word that means, Question three, what are you most excited about right now?
Most excited about our team. We've brought in like 6 senior people over the last 45 days, and they're all kind of starting on Jan 1. So excited about the team coming together and seeing what we do in 2022.
Fantastic. And question four, what turns you off right now?
Yeah, I think COVID turns me off. Yeah,
just the old pandemic,
just the old pandemic, kind of over it. Yeah.
Question five, what sound or noise do you love?
I love the sound of airplanes taking off.
What, the full throttle, bulkhead those throttles, exactly. What, any particular plane or jets or props? Or
747 means I'm going somewhere.
I can't remember where it is, but there's some, I think it's a Greek island somewhere where the runway is directly next to the beach. So you can go and stand there and literally be blown over by the thrust of the jets as they take off. I'll put the link in the show notes. Yes, so if anybody wants to be blown over by a 747.
That sounds awesome.
Question six, then, moving on swiftly. What sound or noise do you hate?
The sound of the Outlook alarm telling me I have another meeting.
Yes. Right. You can switch those off. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I need them, though. I need them.
7. As in question number 7, and you may plead the Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution, what is your favorite curse word? Don't worry, no one's listening. You can say what you like. in all of its majesty, it is the best. Question number 8.
Yeah.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I'd like to be a writer.
Fiction or any particular
genre? I think probably a mix of like fiction and kind of like self-help motivation stuff. I know that's like overdone, but I like it.
No, I know what you mean. There's a science behind that, I'm sure. Yeah. Question 9, what profession would you not like to attempt?
Teaching.
That's right. Yes. That is the greatest challenge of all. Yes.
Can't do it.
Talk about too many moving parts.
Correct.
Final question then, number 10. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
I think that I maximized my potential.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, Johnny, listen, yeah. It's been such a pleasure having you on. How do people find out more about you and about your, you know, the fantastic services that, you know, you provide? What's the best way of contacting you?
Yeah, so you can reach me at johnny@livehomeroom.com. That's my email, and livehomeroom.com is our website. It'll kind of show you, if you're a tenant, you know, how to, you can take virtual tours and find a place to live. And if you're an investor, we have a process for that where you'll talk to some really cool experienced real estate investors about our investing process. So it's all there, livehomeroom.com.
Fantastic. And I think, ladies and gentlemen, we may be looking at the next Airbnb-style billionaire. So you saw it here first, or second or third or something. But Johnny, thank you. It's been such a pleasure having you on. And
thank you for having me.
Look forward to, you know, that press release where you sign your first few $1 billion of Series A funding. And you can send me
I'd love it to have a B in front of it. That would be great.
Yeah, send me a picture from your large yacht in Barbados or wherever you land.
I'll invite you out, Matthew. I'll send a plane.
Fantastic. Good stuff. Johnny, thanks once again, and speak to you soon, I hope.
Thank you, sir.